A white supremacist terrorist has been charged with murder in connection with the terror attack on two mosques in New Zealand yesterday. It left 49 people dead. The terrorist is a 28-year-old Australian. He left a long manifesto explaining his bigoted worldview. Joining us on the line to decipher exactly what happened and maybe provide some answers is Fred Burton. He is one of the world's foremost authorities on security and terrorism. He is the chief security officer for the geopolitical intelligence platform Stratfor. Fred, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
So let's start with the timeline as we know it right now. How did it all unfold?
Well, it's a fascinating look into the mind of a killer. I actually watched the videotape, which I would not encourage anybody to do, just from a tactical aspect. But the individual goes to some great length of showing all the weapons in his car, multiple rifles and a shotgun. On a drive over to the first mosque, he had what I would call in the business is a timing stop. He pulls off on the side of the road for a reason, which is fascinating to me. I don't know if he's waiting for additional people to show up at the mosque or what, but he sets for a number of minutes. He proceeds to the actual mosque, drives down a little alleyway and parks, and then very methodically and brazenly opens up the trunk of his car, pulls two shoulder weapons, and then literally walks down a sidewalk, walks through the front door of the mosque, and starts shooting. And as you can imagine, chaos inside of the location.
Yeah.
And he just goes room to room. And then literally exits the mosque, goes back to his car, gets another weapon, and then goes back into the same mosque and continues to shoot anybody that he had not already killed. Then gets back into his car and proceeds to drive to the second location where the videotape stops.
When you took a look at the manifesto, it's 87 pages. It's got a lot of bigoted worldviews in there. What do we learn about this shooter?
It's an insight into an individual that clearly is very fixated and focused on a range of different previous attacks that are similar in nature, as well as listing his motivations for why he did not choose other specific targets. For example, he lists sites that he had done some surveillance or some intelligence collection of, but decided to choose the first target set where the bulk of the victims were chosen because it was welcoming, it wanted people with open arms to attend and so forth. So I guarantee you, Jason, this is the kind of manifesto that will be studied by mass casualty experts for years because it's a very interesting look into the mind of how someone goes about putting together an operation like this.
Well, how did he go about justifying what it is he did?
Oh, he's got a range of different diatribes against Islam and Muslims around the world, the invaders. He calls them. He justifies his action on his part because of that. Interesting to me from a MO perspective, he's got the name and names of multiple similar actors like him written on the stocks and magazines of his weapons that he's utilizing. This is an individual that, by his own account, started putting this attack together almost 2 years ago, which, you know, we've been talking about it all day here at Stratfor and so forth. You know, there had to be some leakage, in my judgment, on his intentions and motivations, whether it be on social media or what. But for whatever reason, it doesn't appear that he had any contact with law enforcement leading up to this event.
Just joining me, Fred Burton is on the line. He's the chief security officer for the geopolitical intelligence platform Stratfor, which you can find at stratfor.com. Was this preventable? You say you didn't really have any contact with police or wasn't necessarily on their radar, but a plan like this, to your point, had to have been leaked to some people.
One would think so. The challenge in these kinds of investigations, Jason, is always whether or not he told anyone. For example, if you look at a John Hinckley who shot President Reagan or a Sirhan Sirhan who shoots Robert F. Kennedy, a lone actor can be very successful if they never tell anyone of their plans or plots.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, we were able to take a couple screen grabs from his social media platform before it was taken down. And clearly you have an individual that is very fixated on the white hate ideology and so forth. So you get into the entire space and spectrum of what is free speech, where does that cross the line? Who should be under surveillance? Is that the social media platform's problem? Is that law enforcement? But should he have been identified ahead of time? It's hard to say because with the benefit of hindsight, you can clearly connect that dot now. But how many other people are just like him out there saying the same thing?
Well, and part of the reason why this is being identified as terrorism is it's based on an ideology and the intent is to terrorize. It's a little bit different than, say, the shooter at Stoneman Douglas. This is not just a mass shooting. This is a mass shooting that's terrorism.
Correct. And also predicated on target set, methodology, as well as ideology. So, you know, it's clearly a different kind of attack, but certainly domestic terrorism would be the category here in the United States if a similar event unfolded.
Does he fit any profile of these types of shooters?
He does, in my assessment. He certainly fits the profile of Breivik, who carried out a very similar attack. I mean, there's models for individuals like this if you're starting to do comparisons and you can sync up similar ideologies and target sets. So, you know, the question will always be, and I'm sure the New Zealand authorities are asking that question is, you know, what did we miss or did we miss anything? I will tell you this, Jason, after studying the videotape, it was a long time. These things take seconds, and this moved into the minutes, and it was multiple minutes, and you don't see any law enforcement response mm-hmm. At all. I kept waiting for the cops to show up, and you don't see any.
And by one witness talking to CNN said it took between 10 and 15 minutes, at least for him to notice that law enforcement arrived. And I'm wondering, from that perspective, obviously, when something like this happens, regardless of where it happens, the conversation veers towards gun control. And it veers towards, depending on someone's specific ideological perspective, I can see someone pointing out that it took so long for someone to get there. This is why you need to have people who are armed. But, I mean, the reality is these places of worship, they tend to be soft targets. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, what can, if anything, be done to prevent something like this?
Well, it's difficult to prevent. And I know that's something that your listeners don't want to hear, but get back into the mind of a single actor. If he doesn't message intent, law enforcement doesn't know about it. High-value target sets, if they don't have any degree of fixed-post security or fixed-post police presence, are extraordinarily vulnerable. It would be interesting to know what the New Zealand authorities looked at from a domestic perspective regarding what they deemed to be high-value target sets. Were mosques and synagogues part of that? I think it was something like, by my count, almost a little over 12 minutes this goes on at the first location, Jason, and I keep thinking, being an old cop and an old former agent myself, you know, when are the police going to arrive? Mm-hmm. And I was somewhat dumbstruck by the lack of police response. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to point fingers by any degree, but the individual had time to go in once, start killing people, go out to his car, and literally go back in, and then go back out to his car and drive away.
So what's the takeaway for you at this early stage?
From my perspective, I look at this and think, what can be done ahead of time as the dust settles here? You're probably going to find that folks will be outraged that he wasn't identified ahead of time. There's probably that very murky gray threshold of what is an actual threat on social media and what isn't. You'll invariably get friends and coworkers that will say that there was something odd about him at some point in time. I would ask myself, as an Australian, which he was, how does he acquire all those weapons in New Zealand? So those kinds of questions need to be asked, and so forth. So there's a lot of loose investigative ends that need to be nailed down.
Fred Burton is the chief security officer for Stratfor.com. If you go there, you'll be able to see all of their analysis as this investigation unfolds. Fred, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Jason.
Absolutely.